So, we have got Stephanie Cousins from Amnesty International on the line. Yep. And Amnesty International this week released their International State of the World's Human Rights Report. Welcome, Stephanie.
Welcome, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I guess because I guess this annual report is probably a very broad kind of report, the first kind of questions we want to ask is maybe specific, and since we're on an Australian crisis, you know, what does this, you know, annual report, you know, say about the state of, you know, human rights in Australia and specifically around, you know, refugees and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders?
Yep, sure. So the report really highlights some really terrible statistics in Australia with regards to the treatment of Indigenous people. It shows that Indigenous young people in particular are 24 times more likely than non-Indigenous kids to be locked up in detention around the country. And this appalling overrepresentation of children in detention means that Indigenous kids are more at risk of the kind of treatment that we saw at the Don Dale Detention Centre in Northern Territory last year, where young people were tear gassed, they were held in solitary confinement for long periods of time, they were literally tortured in we believe, in Dylan Voller's case, the young man who was held in a restraint chair. And we're just seeing some positive developments, I guess, come from the expose of those abuses in the form of the Royal Commission into youth detention in the Northern Territory. So in a way, it's kind of a mixed story. We're still seeing this terrible overrepresentation of kids in detention, and we're still seeing, you know, we still have really big concerns about the treatment of children in detention in Australia. But on the other hand, we have a Royal Commission, which we think will be a really important vehicle for reform. In terms of refugee rights and the treatment of refugees and asylum seekers, there's just a litany of issues there. The treatment of people on Nauru and Manus Island is just appalling. It amounts to a system of abuse. And we have called on the Australian government for several years to bring the people held on Manus Island and Nauru back to Australia, because they are incredibly damaged by the treatment that they've received by the Australian government in those places. And really the only answer, the quickest way to get them to safety would be to bring them here. Failing that, obviously, we hope that this deal with the United States to send them to the US is a viable option as well. But time has really run out for these people in terms of their mental health and physical security. There are some really big challenges for the Australian government. In addition to that, there's also the failure of the Australian government to legislate for marriage equality, which we highlight in the report as a big failing on the human rights progress for Australia, and also some counter-terrorism laws that we believe tip the balance away from human rights in Australia as well.
Mm. Can you elaborate more on why these sort of against these sort of terror laws by the Australian government?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, one in particular we highlight are the laws brought in last year by the Australian government to strip citizenship of individuals who are meant to be dual citizens. If they have been accused of committing a terrorist act overseas, our concern with that law is that it's essentially tantamount to trying and sentencing somebody for a crime that we haven't actually proved that they've committed. And our recommendation was that Australia would bring, you know, wait to try such people for alleged offences if those offences have enough evidence to try them in a court of law in Australia, then that's the best way to deal with it. We're really concerned that these laws also are very counterproductive, because all it does is kind of push people away instead of actually grappling with the reason why people would go to places like Syria and Iraq to participate in the conflict there. Laws like the citizenship stripping laws are really concerning to us. Also, the metadata laws that Australia has put in place and are now in full effect, which essentially spy on every single Australian. They don't require a warrant, and basically several dozen government agencies are accessing the metadata of all Australians now. And we're very concerned that this will creep out into using that data for a range of different things that violate privacy rights.
I guess maybe we might move on to one sort of angle. I want to sort of ask, you know, what are the sort of, do you think there's sort of some similarities between, you know, those laws and, you know, in your report you mentioned something here about the UK also having, you know, have implementing these surveillance laws. Can you elaborate more? Do you think there's sort of some similarities there with what the UK is doing in terms of on civil liberties and surveillance?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Australia's laws are about as intrusive as anyone's, but we're definitely seeing this as part of a worldwide trend. The UK has gone that way. We've even seen in the United States, I mean, last year after the Orlando nightclub shooting, there was a big tussle between Apple and the US administration about trying to basically crack open iPhone security protocols so that the US administration could access information from people's iPhones. And it's interesting because what we've seen is increasingly it's not just the human rights organisations like Amnesty that are speaking out about this from a privacy rights perspective. It's also the technology companies that are standing up and saying, no, we don't want to violate people's privacy in order to provide access to this data because there is a real cost to that. And we see that cost in a number of countries around the world that are actively surveilling their own citizens for very negative, worrying purposes. For example, to clamp down on freedom of expression, to identify dissidents, to arrest people for politically speaking out in opposition to the government. So this is not a road we want to go down in a free society, is our argument. But there are a number of issues in Australia that we really want to see Australia stepping up and showing consistent leadership on. Australia's now bidding for a seat on the UN Human Rights Council. So we see that as a really big opportunity for Australia to show that it's really serious about improving the human rights situation at home. And probably the priorities for that would really be addressing the Indigenous rights situation and particularly the overrepresentation of Indigenous children in detention and protecting refugees, actually living up to Australia's international obligations to protect people who have sought refuge in this country.
I guess one of the things that is, you know, mentioned in this press release that you put out about this annual report is, you know, you are it states here that blame, hate, and fear, you know, at the centre of these sort of global political trends around human rights. And can you comment a bit more on, you know, what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we've all seen on the television screen some of the narrative of blame, hate and fear in the US presidential election campaign. We're now seeing it transform really into policy where groups of people, vulnerable people in the United States and elsewhere, are being blamed for a whole host of social and economic problems that they actually have no responsibility for. You know, we're seeing seven majority Muslim countries being banned from entry into the United States purely because of this false idea that that will contribute to security. There's absolutely no evidence that that's the case, but still the Trump administration is seeking to do that. Interestingly, the courts in the United States are really pushing back on that, and it really does show that I think we can have some faith and hope that the system goes beyond the individuals that are pushing these narratives of blame and fear. But certainly we have that concern in the United States. We have the same concern in Europe, particularly places like Hungary, in the UK as well. I mean, we've seen a spike of hate crimes in the UK since the Brexit vote, which was very much, you know, the narratives of blame and fear in that campaign were very obvious. And in our own region, the Philippines is a really good example of this. So President Duterte in the Philippines has essentially pledged to kill and ensure that drug users and drug pushers are actually murdered because of a perception that they've fueled this a drug problem in the Philippines. The evidence shows that the drug youth rates in the Philippines aren't much higher or they're on par with the rest of Asia, but this has been held up as a major domestic issue in that country, and as a result, President Duterte's narrative of blame and actually encouraging people to go out, the police but also vigilante groups to go out and kill drug users and pushers, has led to 7,000 people being killed since he was elected in May last year. So we are seeing this as a global phenomenon. It's not just the United States, that's for sure. And we really need the Australian government and other governments that are concerned about this trend to be speaking up. And at this point, in our view, Australia is being complacent because they're not speaking up. We're seeing Australia really trying to constructively engage with the United States, but they're not using that engagement to show what Australia is not going to support. And that really is, you know, the task for Malcolm Turnbull and Julie Bishop now.
Yep. I guess we're going low on time now. I guess, do you have any sort of final comments about this annual report by Amnesty International?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing to keep in mind is while we are seeing some very regressive and worrying trends now, if you look at the long kind of view of history, we are seeing some positive, and the overall trend is towards the positive. I think the last couple of years, you know, that general positive trend is being buckled a little bit. But, you know, if you think about when Amnesty International started, the kinds of issues that we were dealing with, the scale of the use of torture, the scale of the use of the death penalty, which is really, I mean, the number of countries that that actually execute people now is significantly lower than when we started. It's now, you know, a very small minority of countries that actually use the death penalty. Issues around discrimination, the rights particularly of gay, lesbian, bi, trans, gender, intersex and queer people in this country, but also in a number of countries around the world, their rights have definitely been strengthened. So I don't want to leave people with a really negative view of human rights, the direction that we've gone, because I think if you look at the long view, we are going the right direction, but we really need leadership, and that's where the Australian government comes into play. We want to see Australia standing up for the values that we all believe in.
All right. And, Stephanie, how can people check out that latest report?
Yeah, absolutely. They can go to our website, so amnesty.org.au, and it's right there on the front page. And if people want to sign up to our newsletter, they'll get our newsletter with information that comes, including the report. So they can do that from the website as well, amnesty.org.au.
All right. Thank you very much for being on our program, Stephanie.
Thanks very much for having me.
Cheers.